All right, we're doing this. We're back, and we're going to have a fun time today. Sangela, great to see you. And Sarah Brenner, the Principal Deputy Commissioner, it's awesome working with you. You've been here much longer than I have, but I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, close to 6 years, and we are excited that you're here.
Cool.
Excited to have you here.
Yeah.
So today we're doing a little bit of a special edition, celebrating the commissioner's 100th day on
the
job.
Should we get nervous because you've got a paper in front of you?
You should be. I got some tough questions for you today.
Okay, you're interviewing us today?
Yes. So in honor of the special edition, we're going to mix it up a little bit, do a little bit kind of interview style with the two of you. We have opened up questions to the public, and so we received hundreds of questions just in the last 24 hours.
See, we should ask what she's up to. I have no idea what she's up to. Okay, so.
I've been polling staff around the agency, and so in true research fashion, I have tried to filter down. We don't have enough time to go through all of them, but I picked out a couple of themes that I thought would be fun to talk about. So today we're just going to reflect on your first 100 days and kind of where we're going from here, and maybe throw in some fun, get to know you a little bit more.
Okay, bring it on. Let's go. So are these questions from people here at the FDA or any old Joe out there in the world?
Combination. We have questions from parents, we have from industry, we have from FDA staff, a couple from Sangela, got all of it.
Bigfoot contribute any?
I think Bigfoot did. What are you going to have? You know, that actually was one of the questions, is when are you going to have Bigfoot on the show?
Well, Bigfoot's busy. You know, he's got like 8 kids. How many kids do you have, Bigfoot?
Eight
little foots or little big feet?
Little feet.
Okay, little feet. 8.
We'll have to have the whole family on.
Yeah, we'll have them in the orange chairs, or hopefully someday we'll replace these very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think today I'm blending in with the chairs.
We did not pick these chairs. Yeah, they were not picked for this podcast. They were just sitting here in our lobby, and we just said, hey, let's go out in the lobby and just turn the camera on and just talk.
They swivel, though. You know?
Okay, you can't dodge me too long because I know I twisted your arm
to
do this.
She's starting
with the hardest ones first or the hardest ones last.
Well, Marty's so humble that I know he doesn't want to talk about himself, but I think that we've accomplished a lot at the entire agency. We've made a lot of great progress. So I guess maybe when you started the job, what did you come in with as your big goals?
Well, look, I think streamlining the agency, modernizing it. I want to see more cures for everyday Americans and other meaningful treatments, more powerful diagnostics that empower people to get information about their own physiology, their own glucose levels, their own physiology, better processes to do all of these things, healthier food for children, sound inspections, equalizing the playing field between foreign manufacturing and United States manufacturing. I don't think it makes sense to put American manufacturing plants through a ringer of an inspection and then just have scheduled, announced inspections overseas that are less frequent. So I'd like to see more domestic manufacturing. I'd like to see more domestic production of drugs as a national security issue. I'd like to see us support national priorities. Sorry, I think my phone here. That's just the secretary. I'll call him back. So there are incredible things you get to see in the pipeline in this job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an ambitious agenda, right? So you've already started chipping away at that. Mm-hmm. In the first 100 days, what would you say some of the biggest accomplishments are?
Well, the AI thing has been well received broadly throughout the agency. That is that we have now a powerful AI tool for our entire staff, and we're tracking. It's optional. They don't have to use it for their scientific reviews. We're tracking the scientific reviewers and others who are using it, and thousands of our staff are using it every day. So we think they must find it helpful. We just sort of upgraded some of the models to make it more powerful, and we're going to be releasing a sort of 2.0 version later this month. So I love the AI tools that now are available to the staff. Piloting new pathways, that's exciting. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to work through this new pathway whereby our goal is to get a decision in a month or two instead of nearly a year. Reducing animal testing, using some common sense ideas that come from within the agency. The CEO listening tours provided some really formative feedback on some things we can do to improve communication and reduce the amount of guesswork that companies are doing, trying to mind read what the reviewers might want. And as you know, we released the CRs, the
Complete response letters.
Complete response letters, which are sort of for the lay public. The rejection letters, these are the decision letters for drug applications. And so it allows inventors and drug developers to understand exactly how a particular study group thinks.
Right.
And what to expect and what the statistics are on why applications get rejected. And it helps, I think, markets, it helps inventors, it helps drug developers with predictability. Markets like predictability.
We can have a whole conversation just on that. And I think, you know, petroleum-based, taking action on petroleum-based food dyes was another big one that happened in your 100 days.
Yeah, nonstop effort. We're still,
the list keeps is so long, so you'll have to, the public will have to go check it out on the website if you're interested in all the details. But there's another personal accomplishment, I guess we could call it an accomplishment, in the last 100 days, too, if you're comfortable sharing.
Are you talking about the Ravens picks in the draft?
That too, but you also welcomed a new family member.
We've got a newborn baby at home, so that's surgery internship all over again.
It's been a busy 100 days for you, that's for sure. So, you know, you both embody a lot of the Maha lifestyle, but Commissioner, I'm curious, how do you, you know, what do you eat? What's your workout routine? What's your Maha lifestyle?
Well, for being honest, it's always a struggle. Always trying to get the workouts in and eating healthy. It's always a struggle. But I try to get to the gym most days. Now, you're a big runner, if I remember. I'm not a runner. I'm a walker, but
I'm walking.
It's a form of addiction, we'll be honest with you. No, but so, I mean, running in general, cardiovascular and strength training, it's a great way to clear your mind, at least for me. I do some of my best thinking and have some, you know, some of the best breakthroughs when I'm listening to Audible and books and things like that, going for a run or even conversations running. So we've tried to kick off a variety of activities for folks on campus to do that as well. So
we've like had a run club?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So there's a fitness center here.
Oh yeah. And I used it this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in a previous...
I'm not bragging. It's we had a TV crew here and they were like, oh, can you show us the gym and do some, you know, bench presses. So I looked like a fool out there, but I tried to do a couple.
Are you going to do a push-up contest
with
the secretary?
Yeah, how much can you press?
Well, not a lot, but the secretary actually can bench press more than me at the age of 71. That's his age of 71, not mine, by the way. Yeah. But we were supposed to do it where the anchor was going to do some bench presses, and I was going to do bench presses. But then he said, we're out of time, when it was his turn. So it was convenient.
It's convenient.
Yeah.
In a previous life, I led an occupational health program. And so, you know, in some of the themes we've been talking about in terms of improving the function of the agency, it's investing in the people that work here and helping them not only to do a good job, enable them through technology and improvement in processes, through listening to them and incorporating their ideas, finding examples of things that are working really well here and amplifying them, but also, do you want to work here? Do you enjoy working here? Would you recommend working here, right? And so the first 100 days have been outstanding, and I get excited just hearing about all of these. You know, when we go back through, the days go so quickly, you lose track of how many things you've broken ground on. But the first 100 days, at least mine started slightly before yours in the commissioner's office, not the agency, but there were a lot of challenges too.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, we recognize and we spend a lot of time, and I know Sanjali, you and others talk with us as well about how we can really truly listen to some of the challenges and difficulties that people have coming out of earlier in the year. And modify processes, right? And really invest in the workforce, because FDA is only as good as the people that work here. And the processes that they use to do their job and the evidence upon which they're rendering decisions.
Yeah.
And so when I hear, you know, your reflection on list of accomplishments, I hear themes having to do with quality, about transparency, and about truly honing in on and focusing on FDA's core mission and empowering the people who are responsible for carrying it out on a daily basis to do that. So anyways, we started with running, but it's one example of a way in which, you know, we can walk the walk and talk, you know, not just talk the talk, but we were both big, you know, Maha people in terms of healthy living, prevention, lifestyle, good decision making, empowering people to make evidence-based decisions in their personal lives and their health journeys. But also, how do we do that at work? How do we do that at home? Yeah. How do we do that in a seamless way in all the aspects of our lives.
Sorry,
I think it's important to recognize that.
Guess we'll keep going while it takes that call.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, so you
we're rolling. We said it was going to be fun no matter what happens.
Yeah, this is what happens day to day.
Duty calls.
Yeah. So since you have been with the agency through leadership changes, different mm-hmm. time periods, from your perspective, what is different about the last 100 days and, you know, this commissioner,
yeah.
right? Like, what have you seen? What are you excited about?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot, but if I were to try to just kind of put it in categories, it would be the rate of change, which is like being shot out of a rocket, quite frankly, and the level of ambition for change. And maybe there's a third category, and it's something like ruthless pursuit of truth. There's more to it than that. But in any event, I think this has been a time that has been very unsettling for people in good and bad ways. Like the full spectrum. A lot of folks in government choose a civil service career because they like predictability and stability, and they're willing to make a trade-off in terms of their compensation for those things. So I recognize that. I've worked in the civil service now for 6 years here and 2 years before that in the White House. So it's hard for people, this rate of change. And the unpredictability is also difficult. And so we recognize that, and at the same time, kind of like remodeling a house. I don't know if you've done a renovation.
Yes, I have. It's
it seems like
process.
It always gets worse before it gets better, whether it's cleaning a closet or, you know, whatever it is that requires quite a bit of overhaul. That's what we've gone through, and that's what we're going through. And we don't, you know, have to be comfortable with that for it to be the right thing to do. And I don't think there are many people at FDA or in our sister operating divisions or the department who would say everything's perfect the way it is. Like, we've got it all figured out here, right? We don't need to change anything. There are notorious challenges that FDA has had and that HHS has had, the whole government, actually. But, you know, at this moment in time, we're saying we're not going to do business as usual. We're not going to spend years chipping away or nibbling around the edge of the sandwich. We're really going to go for it, and we're going to go for it in a way that maybe has been needed for quite a while. And that's going to be disruptive.
Yeah.
But, you know, the hope is, and my true belief is, that on the other side, we will have, I'll speak to FDA now specifically, a regulatory agency that's truly the gem of the world for what we do. We have, you know, boasted of that reputation in the past. It has been very difficult the last several years, especially through COVID, in terms of public trust, in terms of, you know, our processes have not kept pace in terms of modernization. Our technology use has not kept pace from a modernization standpoint with industry and the private sector. And sooner or later, standing still or making little steps forward, you're behind. And folks see that here. We're really serious about fixing those things. And as we were saying before, going to where the puck is going to be
yeah.
and not where it is. Because in this job, where we're regulating medical products that are on the cutting edge of technology, that are convergent, you know, between different types of tech, digital devices, you know, regular medical or more conventional medical devices, drugs, data, et cetera,
right.
you have to keep pace.
Very well said.
Yeah. So that's really the spirit of what we're trying to do. And that's not to minimize anyone's level of discomfort with how fast it's happening. We really are hoping that. And we've talked before about ways that we're looking to engage frontline review staff, managers, more senior leaders at all levels of experience across FDA to gain their perspectives and their buy-in as we chart solutions and we try to construct solutions that will be implemented at the ground. And that's really the only way to succeed.
And I think part of what you may be referring to is, you know, you and the commissioner decided to do the kind of like a medical reviewer listening mm-hmm. tour of
yeah.
sorts. Is that, tell me more about that.
Yeah, so that's one initial way that I'm looking to gather feedback from frontline review staff. So the commissioner will probably not go to all of those. There will be many of them. But the goal is really to create an environment with small groups of people who do our frontline review work so that they're comfortable sharing, ideating, you know, coming up with new and old ideas, because a lot of ideas people have had for a long time and they just never gain any traction, right? But how can we prioritize different actions that we can take that will dramatically and in a very quick way, or maybe some will be longer construction projects, but start optimizing the way that people do business here. So the reviewer listening session is one way to do that. And I'm hoping that people are very, you know, brutally honest. They have been with me so far. I'm not just going to go around and listen to all the things that are great, but the things that are really challenging that we have opportunities to fix.
Yeah, change is hard. But
it is
when
hard.
You get on the, I love your home renovation analogy. That,
you know, sometimes when I had this quote up on my desktop during COVID for so many years, it's like, the only way past is through. You have to go through. And that's what we're doing now. And, you know, again, it's not to minimize or not be empathetic with the difficulty that that presents to people, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
The other thing that I hope people don't lose sight of is there is a lot that was great about FDA before this administration, in previous administrations, you know, under various leadership styles. The agency has really tremendous strengths, and we've been able to recruit top talent. I'm very interested in retaining top talent and recruiting more top talent. So it's not just about smash it all and build something new. It's also what's worked really well and how do we preserve and amplify those things, learn from those best practices and best examples. So I think it's important to not lose sight of that as we get caught up in the, you know, sort of the excitement of building new things.
Talking about the Commanders draft picks?
We can't talk about that without you.
Okay. Oh, good point.
Yeah. So you're a Ravens fan, though.
Yeah, you know, but they're all winners. They're all God's children. So I support all players.
What did you think about last season?
The Ravens?
Yeah.
Look, I think it was tragic that Zay Flowers injured his knee and couldn't play in that postseason game. We lost to the Bills by 2 points. You know, so there's a lot of what-if thinking. But they're going to be strong this year. Basically, everybody's back, and they got some good new picks. So I'm feeling good about things. Commanders, too. Look, they look strong. If they can get a deal with Terry McLaurin, that contract's up in the air, as you know. He wants a lot of money, and maybe it's an appropriate amount. I'm not going to make a comment on that. but they're in some contract dispute. I think he's getting fined every day he's missing out on their mini training. So a lot's coming down right now with Terry McLaurin. A lot's going down.
Are you one of those people that counts down till the start of the next season?
No, I'm enjoying it. Like, I loved watching the Thunder, and it was just a great run of great professional basketball, and Oklahoma deserves a win. So, I'll turn on whatever's on and support whatever team is playing the best.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, who's your team?
Well, so I grew up in the Midwest, and baseball was my lullaby, right? So my dad played baseball, and he coached baseball for decades, and so I kind of grew up with just the sound of baseball, although football is big in the Midwest. But
I'm a basketball person, so I can't
quite relate.
We've got it all covered. But yeah.
Now I've started watching hockey as well in the last 10 or 15 years. I love sport. I love watching sport. We already talked about running. That's more of a solo sport.
How far do you
run
each day?
Well,
when you run,
it depends on the day.
You run most days?
I try to either do strength training or running. Yeah, okay. Every day. I used to be a little bit crazy and do the ultra stuff.
So, get out, 50 milers plus.
Yeah.
Wow.
But you know, my goal now,
pretty much yoga to shame here.
Yeah, I'd like to run until I, you know, die, right? And so okay. I can't do that if I burn out my joints.
So you love it?
Yeah, yeah. I love it.
Are there any good running trails on campus here?
There are some good routes, yeah. So that's part of what we're trying to gain, you know, some little footholds with invitations for people to run and show others where they run and create little maps, right, cool. Of where they can go. And it's also a great way to get folks to meet each other who would otherwise never meet each other. I mean, this is a massive place. There are a lot of people here. What are we at, 17-some thousand now? And in our effort to collaborate more across the centers, another way to do that on a ground-up way is to just have more opportunities for people to meet each other and share activities together. And if they're sharing healthy activities together, you know, that's even It's even better.
So you talk when you're running. You're not one of these people that's like, I can't talk, I'm focused on my running.
Or I listen to audiobooks because I'm like a book geek.
Wow.
50 miler. I mean, almost, that qualifies as a high-risk behavior in medical terms.
Yeah. I did have more injuries than I wanted to have when I was training at that level.
Okay.
The relays were fun, too, though. I did a 200-mile relay in Vermont through the mountains, the Green Mountains, and that was a lot of fun because then you get to share the pain with others, right?
Well, before you get another call, go ahead.
We're trying to
I know you're stalling me here. So
I have no idea what's on her sheet there. I'm getting a little nervous.
Okay, so we're going to—
Friendly fire here.
I'm sprinkling in some questions we got here. Okay, so while you were taking a call, Sarah and I were talking about, you know, we can't be left behind, right? We have to modernize and do all these things.
Yes.
And so one of the questions we got is, do you worry that letting China copy U.S. IP and run phase one studies is slowly destroying U.S. biotech?
Yeah, I think about China almost every day. I mean, there's a significant threat, not only in terms of regulation, but in terms of innovation and keeping America's position first in the world. I mean, we're seeing companies now essentially allowing IP from the U.S. Patent Office to be tweaked or copied or used for drug development for a new molecule or new patent or a new variation, and then that goes through preclinical IND and phase one in China in lightning speed.
For those of us who may not know, what is an IND?
Investigational new drug, so that whole process to get that status. And then that entity is then getting purchased and then run through the United States regulatory process. And who's buying some of those entities? United States pharmaceutical companies. Now, we can say, like, this is despicable and we have to set up protections. But I think the foremost thing that we need to have come to mind is, how do we create a regulatory process that's efficient in the United States? Mm-hmm. Because it's not just one country. We have competition. Like, we're a regulatory body and we're a country with inventors and we've got competition around the world. So we have got to, you know, in our animal testing reduction plan, we learned that we were still requiring routine animal testing even after a drug was approved in Europe and used in thousands of humans. So those are things where we can say, let's look at the real world evidence. Let's custom tailor the approval process. Let's be creative. Let's be flexible. We've been doing it with rare diseases. We're doing more of that with rare diseases where you just can't run a randomized trial. So I think we have to think creatively. And that's one of the reasons why I love my one-on-one time with scientific reviewers here at the FDA. And you've been doing that too. You've been meeting with them and you hear ideas and you hear new ways of doing things. And look, some of those ideas are not feasible or it's ideas we can't act on right away, but you learn. And so I think there's a lot of great ideas that come from within the FDA. I love the career staff here. I've been getting to know more and more of them. It's the best part of the job.
Mm-hmm. Has anything surprised you about as you've gotten to learn their work and the agency? What has stood out to you?
I mean, just how hard it is to review these giant, gnarly applications. And when you learn about this intense team effort to go through all the details, it makes you want to go back to the office and think, what can we do to make our AI reviewer tool better for them so they can find more value in it? What can we do to make their lives better here on campus, be it a farmer's market or extending food hours or unclogging some of the bureaucracy that they've had to deal with some of their own stuff? So
I think this bigger orientation, though, you know, coming from private sector, it's important to think about competition, and we have to compete, and we have to stay ahead, right? I think in government, we don't think enough about that.
Mm-hmm.
But to do that, you're having to challenge the status quo. We talked about this earlier about modernizing, which is really hard to do, right? Mm-hmm. And then you've got to really think about it. So I'm curious, you know, you were one of the only health officials that had the most bipartisan votes, and, you know, you've really thought a lot about, you know, your agenda, what you were going to do coming in. How did you prepare for the job, right? What were you reading? What kind of conversations were you having to be able to hit the ground running and to get all this off the ground in, you know, just first few days?
I started going on 50-mile runs for the first time in my life.
That's great.
You can join our FDA running club.
No. 0.5-mile runs, maybe, but not 50. You know, I was in the operating room the day before my confirmation hearing, and I've thought a lot about big ideas for the FDA. It's been a lot of my career in health policy, but I was really eager to get here to talk to people on the ground in more depth, in a safe place where they can just explain their big ideas. So I think there's just so many cool opportunities. I think the way you really lead an organization is to work harder than anybody within the organization to show that you're committed. Mm-hmm. And I think you listen to people. And people want to feel heard. When I worked in a gigantic hospital system, my primary way in which I felt valued is when I felt heard. Mm-hmm. We were all ready to work hard. We'd work so hard. But when you felt unheard, that was a bit of a helpless feeling, mm-hmm. and it didn't feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've observed Marty doing that. A lot of people come in and out of the commissioner's office, and you're out on campus talking to people
and
all
I think
the time.
You've been taking more meetings than I because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm one person. I've got a lot of responsibilities. But you've been spending a lot of time meeting one-on-one and even with small groups mm-hmm. without their managers.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So they don't say, thanks to the leadership of my great manager, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And we do have great managers here, but we want to hear like raw, mm-hmm. unfiltered mm-hmm. feelings about the processes here. We're not on a hunt to get people in trouble. We are on a hunt for great ideas.
Yeah, and you are certainly listening. You said another thing about working really hard. You know, I always get questions from friends and family. It's like, what is it like working with the commissioner, right? And that part mm-hmm. is so true. You are in the trenches, right? I don't think a lot of people know this about you, but you are a prolific writer, a great communicator. You've been writing all these op-eds. You've been doing, I've lost count of how many media interviews on top of being here, walking around, taking meetings. I mean, you are in the thick of it. And I mean, you do all of this yourself. I mean, it's really amazing.
Well, the other thing that's outstanding is it's not just idea, it's action, right? And so this is part of what I think is a great moment, an opportunity for a cultural shift here at FDA to have greater transparency, more communication, idea generation, but action, right? And there are several instances, I won't give the specifics, where, you know, right when the first day you were here, the first 2 days you were here, I said, these are the three things that are on fire. We need to take action. And you said, go, go, go. And
were some fires.
There's plenty of fires.
It was a rough time to come in.
It was a very rough time. Yeah. And there were 100 things that needed done, but we prioritized, and you did not hesitate. Once you understood and got the information, it was like, we need to fix this because the people here need us to fix this so that we can do our job, so that we can fulfill this critical mission that no one else has. It's ours alone. We cannot fail. This is like a zero failure, you know, situation.
Yeah.
And so I don't see that in government a lot. I don't see it very often. So, you know, you talked about what's different this time around with the change in leadership at the FDA. And what we had said, were a couple of things having to do with the pace of change and the appetite for change, and then taking action, like decisive, bold action that has been needed, quite frankly, for a long time in a lot of areas. And we've lacked that sort of the vision and then also just the chutzpah to pull the trigger.
So let's be very blunt. There it was a difficult time just before I came in. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of early retirements. There was some reduction in force. There were a lot of changes. Mm-hmm. And there was also some uncertainty about whether or not there was going to be a big reorg, whether or not there were going to be more reductions in force. And so it was a challenging time, and people were hurting. There were people here that had lost colleagues, that lost mm-hmm. people that supported them in their roles. And so we did a rapid assessment. We did a mass reinstatement. We posted jobs quickly, and it's hard to believe it's only been 3 months or so mm-hmm. since I've come in. Mm-hmm. But we've gotten hundreds of jobs now approved to be posted. So if you're interested in coming to work at the FDA, we are hiring scientific reviewers and a whole host of staff at usajobs.gov. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the website. Sounds good.
Yeah.
if you Google USA jobs, you'll see a lot of jobs posted and more that are about to be posted. Mm-hmm. And so we're healing a little bit from some of that change. But this is an incredible place. And we are trying hard to create a great workplace culture. We've got one of the best brands of any brand in the world. We've got a gorgeous campus. We've got phenomenal people that work here, that have been working here for a long time, that love their jobs, that when you see them, they're just smiling and beaming, and they want to tell you about some incredible thing that they just did or were a part of. We have fellows and visitors who come through here and they're just blown away by the professionalism, by the scientific depth, by the talks that we have, by the continual learning that we engage in. So it's an incredible place. And my goal is for us to create an amazing workplace culture that people love, where they love going to their job every day. When I was a surgeon, every morning when I went to work, I thought, how amazing is it that I get to do this? And I can't wait to arrive at the hospital. And in this job, I feel the same way. And my goal is that everybody will feel the same way here.
Yeah.
You'd asked about competition, and I think about this a lot with regard to workforce. I was a faculty member before I came to government for 10 years, and I loved recruiting. I loved recruiting students. I loved recruiting other faculty. And since I've joined the government, I also still love recruiting and building the workforce. And all those things you said, I feel that exact same way. We want this to be a place that is the employer of choice for top talent. And we are competing with industry. We're competing with other, you know, private sector employers, with nonprofits. There's a fierce competition for the type of talent that we have at FDA, physicians, PhDs, dentists, other types of scientists. Every type of personnel that's a professional. I mean, we have our job cut out for us. We always have. This part is not new, competing for top talent.
But the impact, it's so rewarding.
It's rewarding. We're hamstrung in a few ways. I mean, obviously in terms of pay, the government doesn't pay as much as private. But the rewards of doing the job and doing a job well and the impact it has on patients and physicians and the general public and the whole of the country, that is the tie that binds all of the people here at FDA. And it's completely apolitical work. I mean, regulation should be always apolitical work. That is the type of spirit and culture that we hope to foster, continue fostering, really.
So I want to shift gears a little bit. So I have spent a lot of my career working with CEOs of organizations, health systems, pharma companies, you name it, that are multi-billion dollar organizations, right? And I think a lot about, I've learned how they think, how they operate. But I would say in working and observing all of them, even publicly traded companies, don't have the same level of scrutiny that I think, Commissioner, you have in this role, right? I think of you, you're effectively a CEO of this organization. And, every day there's hundreds of articles and headlines about you, many positive, but there's always criticisms, right? You're always under the public eye. How do you personally, emotionally deal with that?
Look, I think controversy is good. I think the different opinions on the FDA, that's a good civil discourse to have. We want to hear people's ideas. We also live in a very partisan time, so I think on average, on the whole, media coverage has been good, representing the good work that's done here by the many people here at the agency. But there's always going to be some noise that's not true, things that are just not true. You're always going to find some individual or individuals that are very unhappy. That was true at Johns Hopkins. It's true at any large organization. And I think it would be wrong to characterize the culture broadly by the opinions of a few people. So our job is to always try to do better, block out the noise. I personally do not read the headlines, although Sarah does read them for me and give me a little summary. But I'm trying to stay positive. I'm trying to do the very best we can. We should have increased scrutiny because this is a taxpayer-funded government organization. It belongs to the American people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't belong to industry. It doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the American people.
Absolutely.
So I do welcome that. Now, some said, when there was the reduction in force, that was far less than a 15% of the workforce being laid off. Southwest Airlines announced the same week that they were going to reduce their workforce by 15%. Mm-hmm. Not a wink from anybody. Nobody said there's going to be safety concerns with travel. And, of course, no scientific reviewer or inspector was laid off as a part of that reduction. But still, we had to go back and do an assessment, figure out how to, streamline things. We're still close enough to that where I think it's healthy to talk about it.
Good.
We're going to get to a point, I think, where We're just going to be looking ahead, but we're still continually doing an assessment. And when we think we got it right, we do another assessment.
You're a surgeon. Mm-hmm. You're so precise, and you're always, you know, making sure you get it. So
repeat until perfection.
Absolutely. Yeah. So well, I know I have to race against the time before, before he gets his next phone call. So I want to get into maybe I'll call a rapid fire. And so a bunch of questions we got, I tried to group them a little bit, and either of you can answer. But one of them is, will this administration put an emphasis on delivering treatments for patients with long COVID?
Look, I'd love to see a clinical trial that shows a benefit of a therapy for patients with long COVID, for individuals with long COVID. I'd love to see that data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We are getting a lot of questions of, you know, what is the FDA going to do to fill a substantial unmet need in treatment options for fill-in-the-blank disease, right? And there's a whole list of different diseases. How do we solve that?
There are a ton of diseases that are terrible. And so I think we get into trouble when we start saying, well, this disease is the most terrible because I have an aunt who suffered from it. Like, I think Alzheimer's is a cruel disease. I had an aunt who died of Alzheimer's. But it would be wrong of me to say we're going to make that a priority over ALS, another debilitating neurodegenerative disease. So I think we have to stick by our commission from Congress, and that is a charge to evaluate data that is presented to us and to deem what is safe and effective when it comes to drugs and devices. Food is a separate issue, and our law enforcement and inspection piece of the FDA is another story. But that is a charge that we have, and it's a charge that we try to uphold every day. Of course, we have to customize that regulatory process to conditions where you can't, it's not feasible to do a randomized trial. But I think that is our charge. And we've got a lot of teamwork with other parts of the healthcare system where we can say, you know, we think this is the future. We'd like to see more in this space. We're going to streamline the regulatory process for, say, for example, AI-empowered software that provides information to clinicians or patients.
We're getting a lot of questions from parents concerned about vaping. And so I would summarize it by saying the vast majority of vapes sold in the country are unapproved, flavored, kind of coming from China. The FDA has failed to stop this for many years. What will change to address this problem?
This is a top problem in the United States and a top priority for us. Kids who are not using combustible cigarettes that start on a vaping product and become addicted to a vaping product with an illegal Chinese vaping product, this is a major problem in the United States. So there's a couple things we can do. One, we are doing a major crackdown. We're looking at all the ways that we can block, confiscate, and destroy illegal products coming into the United States at our ports and across the border. Number two, we need to work with retailers to let them know these are the approved FDA devices for vaping. They are not devices with cutesy marketing for children with fruity flavors and other things. These are the FDA approved products, and everything else is not approved. So we need to provide clarity to them, and we do have a list so that they know these are the legal vaping products. These are the illegal vaping products, and in some of these vaping stores, the majority of the products are illegal. We need to work on the distribution networks of those illegal products, and we need to educate the public. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. I don't say these things lightly, like, oh, here's, you know, our talking points. This is a major, major focus of this FDA right now. We've had an incredible number of parents, friends of the FDA, friends of the leaders of the FDA say, hey, at my school, you would not believe the number of kids, good kids from good families, who are addicted to these vaping products, and they started vaping from scratch underage. This is something we can address, and it's not just vaping. It's 7-OH, which is a synthetic concentrated byproduct of kratom, which is a agonist of opioid receptors. It's literally binding to those opioid receptors and creating some of that effect. It can result in addiction. It's gas station heroin. It's a lot of these products now where we haven't really fully understood them. And when we don't understand new public health interventions or new public health threats. Mm-hmm. We get behind the eight ball in medicine, and time again, we wake up when it's too late, be it cigarettes through the 1920s and 30s, and the medical field woke up too late, be it the opioid epidemic when we woke up 18 years later after the approval of OxyContin mm-hmm. and realized we may have lost a million Americans from this. And so we need to get ahead of a lot of these addictive products. And right now, people don't know what they are. They don't know the research. They don't know the data. And the FDA has even, you know, sort of stumbled trying to understand it because we may be in the infancy.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think related to what you're saying, you know, you're also trying to get the agency to be more proactive in mm-hmm. a lot of these different initiatives, right? Mm-hmm. So shifting gears a little bit, we got some questions about the food policies and what we're thinking there. What is happening with grass, and will we start to see stricter food ingredient regulations like the EU?
So grass is a big focus of Kyle Diamantis in our human foods program. We are doing a lot through the formal process on grass. We're also working with Congress. We're doing an inventory of all of the chemicals that appear in the U.S. food supply that do not appear in the food supply of other countries because these substances have been banned. We're reviewing all the scientific available literature on these different substances. There's a lot of them. There's over 1,000. So we've got it sort of do a proper cataloging of all of these chemicals and then figure out where can we start. And where can we start? By using honey instead of fire, asking companies to remove these substances. You may have heard the maker of Skittles has announced they're no longer going to use titanium dioxide, one of the chemicals on our inventory list. Mm-hmm. And so we can start seeing some incremental improvement. Look, when you get rid of petroleum-based food dyes, kids aren't going to all suddenly be healthy. We're not going to address the fact that 30% of our nation's kids have prediabetes simply by removing petroleum-based food dyes. But these are steps in the right direction.
Right, steps towards those broader goals you mentioned at the beginning, right? And this is just the beginning. It's only been 100 days, right? And we've got a lot more to do. So mm-hmm. As we kind of close, so where are we going from here? What do the next 100 days look like?
Look, I want to keep seeing modernization at the FDA, not just in how we support our scientific staff here with things like the AI tools, but in the processes, in examining every process we have here. And this requires a lot of rolling up our sleeves, understanding. It's sort of like being on the, on the ground mm-hmm. where you have to figure out, well, this person signs off and then it goes to this office. Well, then where's it go after that? And how long does that person, are they staffed appropriately? Mm-hmm. And you're doing a lot of this. Yeah. You've been at the FDA for years, so mm-hmm. you know the people. And mm-hmm. Sarah's been helping us tremendously do a lot of this work. Mm-hmm. People ask me, what's Sarah Brenner up to? And I say, she is on the ground out there mm-hmm. talking to people and workshopping a lot of these processes. It's mm-hmm. not glamorous work. It's not high-profile work. When you come up with a new process, you improve the morale locally within that department, mm-hmm. and you create a more streamlined system that addresses one of our bigger goals, and that is tackling the giant question, why does it take over 10 years for a new drug to come to market? Mm-hmm. Do we really think in the modern mm-hmm. world, if a scientist at a university invents a cure for breast cancer, that it should take 10 years, that we need 10 years to be sure before mm-hmm. if you can notice a complete pathologic response of a tumor from a drug with a very high safety profile, do we really think that mm-hmm. should take another 5 years until it comes to market? Mm-hmm. So I think we need to re-examine some deeply held assumptions about the processes that, let's be honest, they were developed in the 1960s,
right.
and some of them have not been updated. So I love that idea. I love the ideas we're getting within and outside the FDA. And we've got some big reform ideas yeah. that we talk about that are yeah. in our brains that we're yeah. hoping to bring to reality soon that we can't really yeah. talk about just yet.
Sarah, anything yeah. high level you want to share that you're most excited about?
The headlines, you know, are fun because people get excited and we can share with the public what we're doing that the public really cares about within our mission space and with our sister operating divisions. So the interagency work always has excited me since I've joined government, so you can think big and pull levers at the same time to affect maximum change. But Some of the most exciting things, honestly, to me, are really under the hood. They're the things that Marty was just talking about. These are, from my perspective as a civil servant and a career, enduring change at the agency is what motivates me every day. It's why I've stayed here. And when I think about how is this place going to function more efficiently, be more nimble, be more future ready, and you know, continue to recruit and retain top talent in a way that is far better than any of us could have imagined now or previously when I joined 6 years ago, that's what motivates me. And you probably won't see headlines on that, you know, on all the process in there deep, you know, into the optimization of electronic input systems and data analysis systems and sharing of those types of tools amongst frontline review staff. That's not going to be on the news most of the time. But what will the results of that be? The results of those improvements will be faster cures to patients, the things that Marty's right. talking about, right? Harmful or dangerous products not going to market or coming back off market more quickly. This is the core of our mission. This is what impacts patients and physicians and the whole citizenry every day. A lot of it is taken for granted. When you see FDA functioning really, really well, sometimes that goes unnoticed, just like public health right. in general. When FDA is not able to do our job well, everyone suffers. And so, you know, if there's something I hope folks take away from this fun conversation, maybe it's a little bit more serious than the fun one, it's that everybody in America should be cheering for FDA to improve and for us to do our jobs well. And you'd asked how hard it is for Marty to come in and lead this organization. Well, unfortunately, we live in a world in a hyper-politicized environment outside of FDA where they cheer on failures. And I just desperately hope that everyone can understand that what we do here is in service of all Americans, and everyone wins when we're stronger.
Right. Yeah, thank you for saying that. I mean, I have two more pages of questions, but
okay.
I will stop.
These are hard questions coming from within here.
I told you. Yeah, we're going to be transparent here.
Okay.
So I'll save the rest of them for later, and we'll keep
them. She told me she has some hard questions, and I said, okay.
But we'll land on a more fun one. So I hear National Ice Cream Day is coming up, I believe, next week.
Monday.
Yeah. So, Commissioner, what's your favorite ice cream?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask, what am I doing for it? I was going to say I'm going to celebrate with the Secretary and Secretary Brooke Rawlings, and we're going to enjoy some ice cream. As you know, a lot of the ice cream companies are saying we're no longer going to use artificial petroleum-based mm-hmm. food dyes, mm-hmm. so I'm going to take an extra scoop of those brands. And my favorite flavor, maybe vanilla. Is that okay to say that?
Any particular type of vanilla?
I mean, I like it when it's got kind of the popsicle with the chocolate around
okay.
it, but chocolate has a little caffeine, and I'm very caffeine sensitive, so I can only have those in the morning, and it's weird to have ice cream in the morning, so I really don't eat ice cream.
It's okay,
I mean, hardly
you can get
ever
my
eat
husband
them.
Company. I make fun of him for only liking vanilla, so you're in company.
Fantastic.
Yeah, Sarah, what about you?
Well, every day's ice cream day for me. I'm a huge fan. I like to make homemade gelato or homemade ice cream.
Oh, wow.
But I don't know if there's even a flavor that I don't like. I'd have to think hard if there's one that I don't like.
But what's your favorite, though?
Oh, boy.
Mint chocolate chip?
Well, Moose Tracks.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. I was going to ask,
Moose
do you
tracks.
Put any mix-ins in your vanilla? Well, because, you know,
too labor intensive.
If you ask my family, they'll tell you. If you ask her what she wants, she'll say a little bit of everything. And that's true. I have a hard time choosing. So it's like a little, you know, three
well,
or
if
four
I have,
different
I have to decide.
Bits.
Yeah.
So, but probably if I just had to pick one, it would be Moose Tracks.
Okay.
Because it's got everything already in it.
Well, Commissioner, maybe we can get like an ice cream stand at the farmer's market.
Like
some healthy ice cream.
And we want more farmer's markets. The mm-hmm. farmer's markets here, which is every week, are awesome, and the lines are long, and people love the food, so we're going to have more of them. And so what I'm getting at is this is a great place to work if you're a scientist and want to come work at the FDA, USA jobs. But no, this is fun. And it's interesting what you were saying. Nobody does really come up. We spend a lot of time on baby formula, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody will ever come up and say, thank you for not having a baby formula shortage during your term, right? These mm-hmm. are things that like we spend a lot of time on, pandemic preparedness with bird flu.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if nothing happens,
That's a good thing for public health.
The work gets unnoticed, yeah, and that's okay. Yeah. That's part of the job.
Yeah, it is, but it's rewarding work, and we're so glad that you're here, Marty. We really
are. Thanks so much, Sarah. Great.
Thank you for your leadership, both of you. It's really an honor to work with you both, and we'll land here.
Great. All right, guys.
Thank you.
You just saw it. This just happened, so thanks so much. We'll do it again.